Aaron, Polly, and Andrew.
I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And I am Andrew.
Wow, you know, I'm just coming back from vacation. Andrew's about to go on vacation. It's crazy town here.
Oh, me too. I'm also going on vacation.
Oh, are you?
Yes. So this is a rare Tuesday night recording, dear listener, because, you know, Aaron was out of town last week in the District of Columbia.
That is correct.
I will be out of town this weekend in the District of Columbia.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little closer for you.
Yeah, a little closer for me. It's only a 3-hour drive. I'm going to take in a UFL game and a Washington Nationals game.
Ah, nice.
While we were there, you know, we were walking on the National Mall, and I looked up, and you could see the Capitol up there, and I said, hey, you want to storm the Capitol?
Oh, God.
Too soon. Because, you know, it just seems like something you do when you're in town.
Too soon.
Suzanne was like, would you shut up?
Yeah, no, I'm with Suzanne on this one.
Good call. I'm sure he was using his outside voice. Hey, you could see his face and his smile and everything. Just cracking himself up walking down the street.
And then he got tased.
And then he woke up back home in Texas.
Yeah, because the Capitol Police are ready now. They're not fucking around anymore. Yeah,
exactly.
Because that's the thing, Aaron. Because, Aaron, let's play this out. Let's say someone stopped you on the mall, you know, a Capitol policeman, and asked you your ID, and you show it, and it's a Texas driver's license. What do you think his reaction is going to be?
He's going to let you go.
No.
Now, you help yourself, man.
No.
Yeah, come on in.
Go take a poop on the speaker's desk. It's okay.
God. That's what we do around here.
Funny.
I need to go register now, I think, for some sort of list after being part of this.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry, Andrew. You've been registered already. Sigh. Well,
I'm going. Actually, this works out great because I'm fleeing the country tomorrow.
There you go.
So by the time exactly. This thing drops, I'll be in a different jurisdiction completely.
Safely away. Well, we're just going to be taking a look for you when you come back across the border, though. Just saying.
May not. You and Diddy cross that border. We're getting both of you.
Is Diddy south of the border, too?
I don't know where Diddy is. Does anybody know where he is?
I don't know. I just heard he got raided again. That's all I've heard.
I'm sure your crimes are significantly less bad than
apparently my crimes are hanging out with you guys, but
yeah. It's definitely guilt by association, Andrew.
Yeah, exactly.
Co-conspirator, I believe they call that.
You know, while I was there, you know, on the mall, you know, thinking about, you know, storming the Capitol, I gotta tell you, I was like put in mind of, has anybody designed that as a role-playing game session? I just kept kind of visualizing it, going, you know, that could be kind of a fun, you know, con game.
Okay. Well, next Fear the Con, Aaron, we'll be looking for your session.
Well, are you guys planning to go see this new movie come out called Civil War?
I've seen the previews for that, and it's just a little too close to home. It's just a little too raw for me. I don't know if I can do that.
So making a joke on the mall versus watching a movie about a fictional movie, that's where you draw the line.
That's where I draw the line. That's where I draw the line.
Here's the one thing that I don't get about the previews, because they, you know, and it's the preview, so maybe this makes sense when you watch the movie. But they talk about how California and Texas are like part of the Western Federation or something like that.
Uh-huh.
What type of world do you live in where Texas and California get together and decide they're succeeding together?
Well, that's why it's fiction. Just totally fiction. That's where I draw the line.
It is a fantasy.
It's like Star Wars.
Yeah.
I don't know. And maybe, like I said, maybe they'll explain in the backstory when I sit down and watch this in the theaters. But that was the part that I hear. I'm like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. Crazy town.
It
would definitely take a whole different group of Texans to make that happen.
Yeah.
Because I don't see that with our current state.
Yeah. Maybe Austin. Just Austin in California.
Austin is all that lives in the post-apocalyptic.
You know what else is crazy town?
What's that?
You know, I took a trip about 3 weeks ago to San Diego, California, and I took my Geiger and Junkyard Joe trade paperbacks with me for some light reading on the airplane. And at the very back page of Geiger, there's this beautiful full page ad for Redcoat. And at the bottom, you know, it's the all new series from Comic All-Stars, Jeff Johns, Brian Hitch. And at the bottom, this nice little banner says, "The Rise of the Immortal Mercenary Coming 2022.
So when you fell back in the spring, it wasn't turning it back 1 hour. It's turning it back 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
Oh my God, we're back in 2022.
That's right. It's a global do-over.
Oh my yeah. God.
Yeah. Let's start this over. Yeah, I'm sure it was just a typo, Andrew. Just a typo.
Yeah. Two, four, they look a lot alike.
Yeah, yeah. Very similar.
But now, after 2 years of waiting, we finally are getting the Redcoat. The day that you are probably or this releases, hopefully, the first issue of Redcoat will be hitting your comic book stands or Comixology apps.
Right. Absolutely, yeah. So on not 2022, but on Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024, Redcoat number one is out. As of this recording, well, as of the time you're listening to this recording, and Ghost Machine has launched with three titles. So Ghost Machine, as a reminder for people who didn't listen to that prior episode, is a new media company that's founded as a kind of an imprint of Image Comics. So Image Comics is the publisher and the media company is Ghost Machine. It started, kind of Jeff Johns is one of the key creatives here, but it's kind of a joint venture between a lot of the creative teams that are on these initial launch books. So Brad Meltzer, Jason Fabok, Gary Frank, Brian Hitch, Jeff Johns, Francis Manupol, Pete Tomasi, and a couple of others all kind of have this stake in these creator-owned titles that are being created through Ghost Machine.
And in the Ghost Machine universe.
Yes, the Ghost Machine universe, which has, as of today, these three titles, we get two separate universes. We get the unnamed universe, which is in Geiger and Redcoat. And right. I think Rook is off doing its own thing.
It's definitely doing its own thing. I don't know if they're going to somehow tie it into the unknown universe or not, but it's definitely
unnamed. Unnamed. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Unnamed. Yeah. Yeah. But do you think we call Jeff Johns the grand architect of Ghost
Machine? I would say so. I mean, he wrote all three books that came out this week. So I would say he's definitely the main architect. I think the majority of these first runs of titles are going to be written by him.
Well, since we're talking about Redcoat, did you guys enjoy the Brian Hitch art?
More than I normally enjoy Brian Hitch art, honestly.
I know you have issues. Historically, Paul has had issues with Brian Hitch art.
Yeah, I guess let's go ahead and start with Redcoat since we're talking about it.
Yeah.
I honestly, Brian Hitch, I do have Brian Hitch issues. I will say I'd say within the last year, I have had far fewer Brian Hitch issues. Mm-hmm. The Ultimate Invasion and now this, I haven't had really any issues with his art style.
Yeah.
I know this book was probably drawn in 2022, but.
I do wonder how long this has been sitting in a drawer. With companies like Marvel, who the minute it's drawn, they're printing it. I wonder how long they've been holding on to this. I gather that initially this was going to be a Jeff Johns, solo sort of endeavor. And then I gather at some point, there was like, hey, why don't we invite all of our friends to come and do this with us? And I think that's why it got paused. But, when did Brian finish drawing this thing?
Two to 3 years ago.
Yeah, that would be my guess as well. And it's just uncanny that, they sat on it for as long as they did. But I think having three books on the shelf at launch is a lot stronger and gets their feet under them, better than other endeavors have done. Like, I look at a company like AWA Studios that produces really high quality content. I like a lot of the books from AWA, but they only release like a book a month or two. Right.
Right.
They just don't have a lot of volume. And so, without taking up some landscape on the bookshelf, virtual or otherwise, I think it's hard to get your brand out there. So I like that they came out with three, and I'll go ahead and say it, three really strong books in their first release. I think that says a lot for this. And I've got my fingers crossed that this, has some staying power.
I liked and we'll talk about Geiger here, but I liked all three of these more than the preview. Obviously, mm-hmm. The previews were only like short bits, but right.
They were flavor.
Yeah, but I thought all three of these first issues were really strong.
Yeah.
In both writing and art, and, you know, establishing the universe and making me interested in what's next.
Yeah. And, you know, as an affirmed American, I don't feel like I'm supposed to like Redcoat, but I liked him an awful lot.
Well, I mean, the thing with it, the Redcoat, it's right there, you know, in his tag. It's an immortal mercenary, kind of a tool.
Yeah.
Like, you're not supposed to hate him, but he's not really, you're not really supposed to be looking up to him. You're not supposed to maybe having warm fuzzies about him.
Yeah. And, you know, they establish in the book that, you know, he's not like, you know, a loyal British soldier. He's a gun for hire.
Right.
And he wears the British uniform and stumbles into an occult ritual.
And he kind of screws Ben Franklin a little bit.
Well, and it just kills me that it's Ben Franklin who is the subject of the occult ritual to gain these powers of immortality. And because he interrupts the ritual, he's the one who becomes imbued as an immortal instead of Ben Franklin. And I just there is a part of me that just found that absolutely hysterical.
I loved it. I love how they're kind of interweaving, pseudo American history from the founding fathers into the book. And I guess past we're up to the 1800. No, I guess 1900s right now. And I just love it. It's kind of that alternate past kind of Knights of Rainsboro season 3-esque. and I got to say, I love it.
With the Albert Einstein as his faithful sidekick.
Uh-huh. The Genius and the Fools, that is the name of the second issue. And it's got a nice sense of humor. Like, you know, A Genius and an Idiot is the title of the second issue. And I love the sense of humor that Geoff Johns brings to Simon Pure, the Redcoat. And kind of the tongue in cheek type of jokes, like the kind of different panels of him just getting slapped by different women over the decades.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
It's a lot of fun. I dug this book a lot.
I did too. And I think, I'm very curious to find out with this continuity they're establishing, right? That, you know, they've kind of got a timeline at the end of the book, of this unnamed universe where Redcoat is kind of the start of it in 1776. But they also have dates in 1864 and 1944, 1972 and beyond. And it kind of makes me wonder, you know, if what we're seeing in Redcoat, is this going to be secret history? Like, you know, the world unfolded as we know it, but behind the scenes, it was really, you know, this magical, you know, stuff. Or, you know, is this going to be something that's known in the history of this universe?
Well, it seems like some of it is known, because, I mean, Junkyard, we know from Junkyard Joe, you know, he is known. There was a comic about him. So he's in the cultural knowledge, and then of course the people in the town find out that he's real. So I think maybe it's gonna be one of those things where some people know and some people don't. But maybe it's not going to be the uber secret to just it's not just going to be the Illuminati that knows.
I will say the only thing that concerns me, and we're going to talk about Geiger here in a second, might as well, since it's in the unnamed universe, is I love the concepts of some of these titles together. Or excuse me, separate, you know, alone. Yeah, and right. I don't know how I feel about them being in a shared universe. Yeah. And a lot of that's honestly driven by the fact that Geiger, is this post-apocalyptic world where, you know, nuclear war has really decimated most of America. And I feel kind of sad that some of these stories that we've come to know and love, like the story of Junkyard Joe, that's where it's going, you know, in the year 2025.
We also know there's time travel involved in this universe, or some sort of travel, because if you remember from Junkyard Joe, there was that part where the little portal opens up and they're like spying on, like, oh, it's not time yet. And then they kind of disappear back in the portal. So
fair point.
Geiger is the character that we know the most about, because we have had an entire, you know, mini series or limited series, whatever you want to call it, with Geiger. And can I just say that after reading this issue of Geiger, my favorite character in the book has emerged. At long last, I have a favorite character in the Geiger book.
Is it due to your love of alliteration?
It is not. It is my favorite character in the book is Barney. The two-headed wolf And I have decided that what I really need is a Barney plush toy. I need a Barney plushie immediately.
You know what? You know, this Geiger book, I thought Geiger issue one, same creative team. Mm-hmm. It's still Jeff Johns, Gary Frank, Brad Anderson, you know, same creative team as the original series and the one shots and stuff like that. I thought this was the strongest issue of Geiger.
I would agree. I think that it gives them the ability, you know, having done the original and then relaunching, they kind of have a better feeling for the character now. And I think it's a little bit more interesting him wandering the wastelands versus his battle against Las Vegas. Right. I really like the Don Quixote character that he's got with him. You know, his Sancho Panza, if you will, coming along, you know, his sidekick.
Nate the Nuclear Knight.
That's right. That's right. And I like him, you know, and I like that he's on a redemption story. Right. I got a kick out of this book that I didn't in the previous one shot that they did for Geiger.
I thought I will say, you know, the opening scene of this book kind of sets up this Western scenario, right? This post-apocalyptic Western scenario where the townsfolk are being taken advantage of by these criminals, and Geiger comes in, and I loved that opening sequence, and it made me sad that they were like, all right, Geiger, get stepping. We don't want you here. And then now we're back on, you know, and Geiger travels across America, which, you know, I was like, I really liked what you were setting up there.
Yeah. Maybe it's going to be a little kung fu, you know.
Yeah. Maybe he'll go from town to town.
Righting wrongs, protecting the weak, you know. Well, I think Nate gives him a good way to, you know, explain things. And he's a good kind of, you know, sounding board for him to kind of go off of. And kind of you can explore Tariq's mindscape a little bit more since he actually has someone to talk to besides Barney.
It's always important
because Tariq as a character is
he's a little one note.
Right? He is.
Sorry, Aaron, I didn't mean to talk over you.
But it's important to have an expository friend, right?
Yeah.
Someone who lets you tell your inner dialogue, you know.
And will ask questions, right? Probing questions.
Yeah. Exactly. Right. Just like you just did, Andrew.
But yeah, no, I agree. I think Geiger was a little one note in the first five books or whatever it was, five or six issues. So I'm hopeful for this. I did feel like, I don't know if it was just me, I felt like the art was not quite up to snuff as the first volume, but maybe that was just because I was reading it, you know, on the preview copies. Maybe it just wasn't quite as high.
I thought the art was really strong. I mean, he hasn't had 3 years to complete this book, you know, because he... you know, Gary Frank, who's the artist on this book, has been drawing Geiger all this time. So so maybe he hasn't had the long lead in. But I thought the art was fine.
And I love Barney.
And we love Barney.
Barney is a good boy.
He is a good boy.
He's a good boy.
All right. Well, so Rook Exodus, which is while I liked all three books, it was my least favorite of the three.
Same.
I would agree. And you know what's sad is this is the book that I was most looking forward to. Primarily because Gary Frank is one of my favorite artists, but Jason Fabok is probably my favorite current artist in comic books. And his art's fantastic in this issue, but I didn't dislike the book. Actually, I thought, like I said, I thought all three were strong. I thought this was the universe I had the least amount of investment in.
Right.
So the world of Rook is that, you know, we have abandoned the planet. To a new planet, Exodus, and these people that have been, you know, on Exodus have been, Exodus was terraformed, and people have, and certain people are I guess, I don't know what they're called, but he's called Rook, but certain people have been given the task of basically controlling animals. They've been given helmets capable of commanding an animal species. So Rook commands crows. You know, but he's also got a friend who commands warthogs,
pigs. Big old pigs. Right.
So that's the world that we've found ourselves in. And, you know, I don't love that we're getting two post-apocalyptic books at the same time.
And I think that's my problem is that it's kind of they're too much of the same note. You know, the book starts out with, you know, it's the Kepler system, Planet F. Purchased by Better Worlds, trademarked 2152, rebranded Exodus in 2153, colonized 2159, Earth engine failure in 2170, evacuation 2171. So the planet, you know, the engine that's sort of terraforming the planet has crashed, and the planet is beginning to revert back to its original self. And so, you know, people have to the best of their ability fled the planet to hopefully return to Earth or maybe a different colony world, what have you. But some folks got left behind and are still trying to, you know, figure out their way off planet. And the planet's just really just kind of coming apart at its seams. And there is one page in this book that was deliriously awesome. And it, for right now, I mean, you know, we're just in April, but it was my holy shit moment of the year. And it's when the bear swarm strikes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm just like, holy shit. And it's not just that these are great big grizzly bears. They're giant grizzly bears. And I just kind of loved that scene.
Doing battle with giant warthogs.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was a terrific, just chilling sort of scene. And just seeing, you know, all of these giant bears just tearing shit up. I loved it.
It's a strong start. I think in the context of reading the three books and getting two post-apocalyptic books back to back, I think that may have hindered it a bit. Uh-huh. But I thought, I mean, the Jason Fabok art is fantastic. You don't get a lot of human faces because pretty much everyone's face is covered by a mask or a helmet most of the issue, but you get a lot of animals.
and a lot of
beautiful cityscapes.
It is, well, cityscapes. I don't know about
beautiful. Yeah, I mean, beautifully drawn, decimated cityscapes.
Yeah. I do think that it suffers from sharing much of the same tone as Geiger. But on its own, I loved the big swing that Rook took in establishing the world. Mm-hmm. You know, and I thought it did a really efficient job in laying that out in a single issue. It also really kind of told the story of our main character and gave him a supporting cast in his friend, that I think he calls Swine.
Because he's the pig guy.
I got a kick out of that, and I enjoyed sort of his survivalist mode, you know, him going from, you know, luxury home to luxury home, you know, looking for, you know, food. It really did set that tone. It's just a shame that both of those came out at the same time.
Agreed.
I would have liked to have seen a broader palette in the first three issues that were released. And I imagine this was a conversation that they had there at, you know, Ghost Machine and Image Comics. Like, you know, you don't have another one you could release. You didn't want to do something with Junkyard Joe again, to really broaden the spectrum. But, you know, it judged on its own, I think Rook is a really strong book.
I think one of the things that interests me about Rook, and I didn't get that, The story itself did not necessarily give me that feel, but one of the things that I am hopeful, ultimately, I think one of the issues I had with Rook, or the only issue I really had with it other than what we said, is that there's not a lot of fun in the book. There's very little humor. But I think the concept intrigues me because the back page or one of the back pages of the book says choose your animal, and it shows all the different characters and all their different helmets, which are kind of designed like the animals they control. And that to me screams like high concept 1980s toy line, right? Like, true. Here's your Rook toy. He controls the crows. Here's right. your Ursaw toy. He yeah. controls the bears. And that's the vibe that the concept is giving me. I hope they play with that a bit. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope they lean into that more, because the first issue, you know, very much, you know, kind of grim and gritty. But I think it has that potential if they play with it a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought all three of these books were great. Obviously you rank them because that's what we do. But, yeah. I thought they were all three really strong. And I'm eager to see what other books come from Ghost Machine. We've got the titles that they've, you know, already announced, right?
Some of which we saw in the preview. Like, we saw Hornsby and Halo. We saw Hyde Street, the Rockefellers, in that preview issue.
Yeah, I'm very excited about Hyde Street. The preview pages did not sell me on it, mm-hmm. just because of the weird storytelling, you know, but that's part of just what happens when you have a 4-page story.
Right.
But, you know, the Ivan Rice, you know, yes. kind of inspired by Tales from the Crypt horror book, you know, universe. I'm really psyched about that. So I hope they land the plane on that one.
Yeah, it is one I'm looking forward to the most after Redcoat.
Well, yeah. And the big tell will be, you know, how do the issue twos go? And the mm-hmm. issue threes, you know, I sure. mean, let's see how they continue to execute. But I found this debut very promising.
Agreed.
And I can't wait till Brad Meltzer gets in there. So.
Oh, yeah. Same here. Because I don't know which one he's writing.
Yeah, I was going to say, which one is he doing? Yeah,
I don't know.
Okay. I don't know that it's been announced yet.
Yeah.
You know, it's not on the cover of Halo, excuse me, of Rook. but I'm looking at the covers in the preview at the end of the book where it says, like, yeah, you know, here's the calendar. And for Rook, they show, you know, Rook on the cover with his helmet and stuff. And then they show like a coolly designed vehicle. And I'm like, that looks like a toy. So uh-huh. it does feel like that may be the vibe they're going for.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of creating this toy line with this science fiction, you know, story behind it. So, yeah, strong start to Ghost Machine.
I do wonder because, you know, I was considering the title Rook Exodus. I'm like, well, why not just Rook? You know, because that's the name of your character. And it makes me wonder if each chapter will get a different name. You know, each arc. Yeah. So like, you know, Rook Exodus, Rook Earth, Rook, you know, wherever he is, you know, if it's not always going to be Rook Exodus, you know, if that second word changes over time,
or will the
I would
first
imagine
word,
it would
will the first oh, yeah. word change?
You never know.
Well, Swine. Say Exodus. Right, Ursa, you know, Exodus.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think it's gonna say Swine. spoilers
it could be a prequel. Yeah. But yes, all three are good. I think we recommend all three.
Yeah,
absolutely. You know, and the art is beautiful in all three.
And I just want to take a moment to thank Image Comics for sharing the preview copies with us so that we could have this conversation before New Comic Book Day, because these books were great. I you know, as a testament to how good they were, I'm going to buy the Comixology digital copies.
Same. I want to support this line and I want it to continue.
Yeah. And nice I want to have it to.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying I want to be able to go back and read it through guided view, because as much as I appreciate the preview copies, God, how I hate reading a PDF.
Yeah, well, same.
Two page spreads lose a lot when you're reading.
They sure do.
Oh yeah, they sure do.
It's rough. But no, I'm not digital. But I have my Geiger and Junkyard Joe trade paperbacks. I'm planning to add a Redcoat one and probably a Rook one to it as they come out.
Yeah, so. For sure.
Well, these were great. We want to know what you thought of these three Ghost Machine books. Give us a shout at ideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up on social media, IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
What a deal. Well, thanks for joining us on this very special episode of Money Books with Aaron, Polly, and Andrew. We will look forward to chatting with you all again real soon after Andrew and Paul are back from vacation, for crying out loud.
If Andrew makes it back from vacation.
Well, we're not sure we're going to make it across that border. I'm just saying.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. We will need to see your papers.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. See ya.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.